As I said earlier this morning, we do a lot of work and we think a lot about service in the contemplative dimension. And I like to collect little statements that people say, their insight about service in the contemplative dimension. I also have some quotes by Father Thomas Keating. And so I would just like to open this afternoon's presentation with a few of those comments. If you've attended a couple of the presentations that are the visioning that I did a couple of years ago and the Dark Nights last year, you know I like to start with something on servant leadership to remind us why we do what we do in terms of service. So service in the contemplative dimension is a connection of energy. The way we interact with one another is the way we interact with God. And so you can just listen to these with the ear of the heart. And I have this little handout, and you can I'll put it down, and you can come up and copy it afterwards if you want. Contemplative life and service has moved away from mythic consciousness that relates to sin-centered religion. You want me to read that again?
Yes, please.
This is not in your handout. Contemplative life and service has moved away from mythic consciousness that relates to a sin-centered religion.
One more time.
Are you sure? Are you writing it down? Because you can come and copy it later if you want. All right, I will say it one more time. Contemplative life and service has moved away from mythic consciousness that relates to sin-centered religion. Mystic consciousness views all life as embraced in the mercy and love of God. This is the movement into discovery of Christ anew. And remember, we use the word mystic as a synonym to contemplation. Service in the contemplative dimension grows out of our previous stages of being and becoming. Service in the contemplative dimension is not rescue theology, but the realization of both servant and those being served as being created anew. Contemplative service is not solely communicating a method, but a model of service that is the embodiment of the charism and vision, an attempt to be conscious and in service to that transmission. We are an organ of the mystical body, a depository of truth with limited awareness. We are called to create a path that others may travel with us. People give most when they feel called by the Spirit to do so. That level of service reflects our relationship with God. Loving service And the contemplative dimension seeks no return in terms of success. The heart of a servant is the sanctuary of God. Okay.
Where did you get this quote, Susan? Are they all from one person, or are they from Father Keating? Or?
I would say at least half of these are from Father Thomas Keating on this page. But as I said earlier, I like when we have had workshops on contemplative service or servant leadership, and there are insights explored and shared, I like to make note of them and share them with others. It helps me. And I think listening to these nuances about contemplative service, it gives me a purpose for what I'm doing. And I always say that I'm a person of purpose. I have to have a reason for doing what I do, or I won't last very long at what I'm doing. I need a purpose and I need an objective for what I do. And so this helps me to keep that close to me, to myself, to my spirit. Okay?
So some of those were from people that had taken your...
You know what, I just, as I go through this, I don't list who said it, but I know that Father Thomas has talked about indicates a movement from mythic to mystic level of servant leadership, and contemplative service reflects a prophetic innovative, that's my statement. The prophetic and innovative stage of the journey is under the direct inspiration and guidance of the Holy Spirit. Okay? So, and this is from Father Thomas in 1997, leadership requires a clear articulation of the contemplative outreach vision and principles with a sensitivity to the whole of the spiritual network. Okay?
It's just a wonderful reflection on your workshops that people come back with those kind of statements. That was my thought.
Absolutely. I'm always amazed at, how people are growing in that understanding. And it's like, asking the question, if Father Thomas asked us the question, when he would say, well, we've only scratched the tip of the iceberg in our understanding of servant leadership, taking it to the contemplative dimension, these are some statements that allow us to take it deeper and understand it and articulate it with some degree of clarity. It doesn't mean that we've arrived or that we exemplify that level of servant leadership, but we have the capacity to move in that direction, and that's hopeful for me and inspiring. Okay? All right. So this afternoon, we are going to speak on the topic of soul friending. Now, I know some of you have been through the Living Flame program, and the reason I know that is because I was there, and I presented, I think, the Night of Sense, and then the following year, the Night of Spirit. Soul friending in the Living Flame program is usually presented as two people developing a soulful, full of soul relationship. But the way I present this is in the context of a centering prayer group. In the year 2001, I think, Father Thomas wrote a series of articles in the newsletter, in the Contemplative Outreach newsletter, on soul friending. That was his hope and expectation, that centering prayer groups, facilitators and prayer group members would arrive at that stage of soul friending. And best that I can remember back in those days, in the old days, is that many people at that point in time were asking for spiritual directors that they could tap into, recommended by Contemplative Outreach to help them on their contemplative journey. And at one point in time, there was even a pilot program that was called Lux Divina that we hoped would manifest as a spiritual direction program to train people on the contemplative journey to be spiritual directors to people on the contemplative journey. And when it was all said and done, the program did not manifest as something that Thomas had envisioned, so it was tabled. And unfortunately, we never got around to developing another program like that. We know that it's difficult to find a spiritual director when one is on the contemplative journey. And I remember some of the guidelines that Father Thomas has given people when I have attended some talks that he gave to facilitators way back when in St. Louis. And one of the things that he said is that he would hope that if we engage a spiritual director, that it would be nice to know that that person also was on the contemplative journey. But also that they would have a little knowing and insight into the dark nights of the soul, the night of sense and the night of spirit, because many of us on the contemplative journey, if we continue our prayer and as our prayer deepens in our relationship with God, may in fact encounter some of those are the dark night, particularly the night of sense. And so we would hope that a spiritual director would have some knowledge, working knowledge of the night of sense, and perhaps some experience. But we, again, I reiterate, we know that it's difficult to find a spiritual journey. So today we're going to talk about soul friending and what Father Thomas wrote in those articles, and this is greatly synthesized from what he wrote. I have tried to retrieve from Claire Ng in the Butler office the original articles from those newsletters, and it's either, I don't know if they're at Emory University now, but she could not retrieve them for me. And the reason I put it into a synthesized version is that at the time in the St. Louis chapter, I was the person who was, I had taken on the responsibility of being present to the facilitators and providing facilitator enrichment and getting together with facilitators and listening to them and allowing them to network with other facilitators. So this is a synthesized version of the soul friending articles that Thomas wrote back in 2001, but in the context of a centering prayer group. So I like to start with Psalm 32. It is a spirit in the person, the breath of the Almighty, that gives the soul understanding. I'll read that again. It is a spirit in the person, the breath of the Almighty, that gives the soul understanding. Psalm 32. Okay. Now, in speaking about soul friending, what do we know of the word soul? Who here has seen their soul? Who here is in relationship with your soul? Who here understands that they are in relationship and has experienced an enlightened relationship with another soul? who here can tell me what the nature and essence of soul is? Okay, all right, so it's a feeling of unconditional love.
It's when your spirits meet.
Okay. Okay.
Well, the soul itself is your mind, your will, and your emotions.
That's what comprises the soul.
Yeah.
So, the mind, the will, and emotions. Okay.
The deepest part of your being.
Okay. All right, this is part of our being.
I used to take ballet and dance, and I used to feel the height of it when I did movement, which I felt finally I understood it was the spirit within me. I can't lift my hand. I can't, like Psalm 139, every step I take, every breath I make, I can't do it without this. What are the attributes, you know, power, the essence of God? That's in us. That's our soul.
Okay. All right. So you said words like power and energy within you.
Within.
That you're relating to soul.
Eternal.
Okay. Soul, eternal, yes?
I consider it the core of me, my true self.
Okay. All right. Has anyone ever seen their soul? Have you ever observed the soul of another human being? No, it's really like saying, well, what is God? Or, I love in one presentation, can't think of what it is right now, but to ask people, tell me what wisdom is. What is wisdom? What is love? What is faith? Some people will say, oh, I have faith. And the spiritual director would say to me, well, if you would just have faith, and that was a thorn in my side. No. Or if you just let go. So I discovered that there was a four-step process in being able to let go. Okay, but that's beside the point. What is a soul? Okay, so I have gone to different sources to see what others say about what is a soul. And when we say, what is God? Or, oh, I love God. Or, we have a soul friend. Or, I found a soul mate. You know, we're talking about something that is non-tangible, that is immaterial, that is invisible, that is not known. Is that correct? But we still believe, yes, in that nebulous word called faith, by faith and in faith, that there is a soul. So, some of the nuances that I have heard, in addition to what you said today, is that it is an immaterial, non-material essence of a human being, our true essence. It is the animating principle, the total self, I might say, true self of a person. It is distinct from the human body. It is separable from the body at death. It is comprised of divine energy, and it is that part of us that is non-physical. The soul versus spirit, says one theologian, is often confused. The soul and spirit are both important and are deep dimensions of the self, the true self, but radically distinct from one another. Interesting. And I know that some of you here attended the in-depth, the immersion experience we had on the seven mansions of the interior castle a few years ago, Teresa Avila's very rich jewel-encrusted teaching in each mansion. And when I really got into that as a student, I noticed probably on the 20th time I had either read the Seven Mansions or given the presentation a couple of times, that in the fourth mansion, she begins to speak to us as soul. She begins to refer to us as soul. But in the sixth mansion, she tells us that the soul becomes spirit in that sixth mansion, which is the mansion of betrothal, being engaged, that movement to unity that happens in the seventh mansion. So this, does that give me an absolute wonderful picture of what the soul is, and can I find words to better articulate it? No, I cannot. However, I trust that it is so. I reiterate that the reason Father Thomas wrote this, this information in those sequence of articles, was his hope and expectation that the Centering Prayer Group would mature to a place where soul friending is taking place within the group and would serve as spiritual direction for the people in the group, knowing at that time that sometimes it is very difficult to find a spiritual director in the spirit, in the contemplative dimension. Thomas said in the beginning of one of his articles that all events sponsored by contemplative outreach are a form of spiritual direction or soul friending. And I believe that. It always feels like, you know, we are meeting one another soul to soul. The essence of a centering prayer group is the forming of a spiritual, contemplative, small faith community in which to share the prayer in a sacred space. So he's defining what the Centering Prayer Group is and its objective. He goes on to say that there's a distinction between spiritual direction and soul friending. And all of this is in your handout, so you may not have to take notes. But let's look at this for a little bit. In spiritual direction, usually it is personally directed to one person. And I mentioned that I have had a spiritual director in the past. It is concentrated. It is generally offered for the objective of spiritual growth and deepening relationship with God. The Holy Spirit is the director. So it's a triangular relationship. Hopefully, the spiritual direction identifies underlying principles to a particular situation in one's life on a committed spiritual journey. Really, I can't imagine anyone engaging the services of a spiritual director if they're not on a serious spiritual journey, because it's not clinical therapy. So, it is about one's relationship with God in the present moment, at the present time. It will address challenges, and the directee may be challenged, just as I told you the little story about my spiritual director this morning. It does offer spiritual advice when needed in terms of spiritual practice, perhaps the need for a retreat or other spiritual practices that are suggested. But the directee perceives the director usually as a person with a little bit more authority or more experienced on the contemplative journey than they might be at the time they enlist the services. So what's the difference between spiritual direction and soul friending? In the article, Father Thomas said that it's a different, that soul friending is really a different dynamic than spiritual direction. It is not therapy and should not be therapy. It is sharing with a trusted person or persons who have been through or having the same experience. Interesting. Who are have been through are having the same experience. Persons sharing in a soul-friending environment, let's just say centering prayer group, are perceived on an equal basis. The facilitator is not the guru of your centering prayer group. No one of the prayer group members is the leader or the spiritual director assigned to the group. Everyone is perceived on an equal basis, even though we might be at developmental stages of spiritual growth. There's a willingness to walk with friends and share the journey. And I love what brings to mind, and I don't think Thomas mentioned this in the articles, and I inserted this, but it reminds me of the scriptural Mary meeting Elizabeth with the news of the incarnation. The Holy Spirit is always the group director. The Holy Spirit is the guru. Well, Thomas would say Christ is the teacher here. If you notice that we don't call ourselves teachers, we call ourselves presenters, because I have also heard him say that in contemplative outreach, Christ is the one true teacher. So I never present myself as a teacher. I simply am a presenter making an offering. So the soul friending cultivates an attitude of contemplative service to one another. And remember this morning I said that there's a lot of overlap. We heard this in the four levels of listening. So also in soul friending, there is no financial expectation, as sometimes there is with a certified spiritual director. And it should always exemplify, here are those two words again, utmost charity. I can't say that the spiritual director that I had always exemplified utmost charity, but the reality is I got what I needed at the moment. And who was I sharing with at lunchtime? Another little story about him, and could probably write a book about that person. And you know how we have the hills and valleys of our spiritual journey, and sometimes we're on a spiritual high, we're on the mountaintop, and then we dip down into the valley and it's not so hot. And I was in one of those funky places, and I had the meeting with the spiritual director, and I said, well, you know, I'm quitting. This is it. I quit. I'm not doing the spiritual journey anymore. You know, and there was this moment of silence, which is always painful. And he said, may I ask you why? And I said, well, because, and this was pre-centering prayer, but I had a meditative practice for a number of years before centering prayer. And I said, well, I am not going to meditate anymore. I'm finished with that. And he said, well, may I ask you about that? And I said, well, you know, I feel like after meditation that I'm worse. I just get worse. I'm getting worse, not better. And he, of course, the moment of silence, then he would say, well, would you like to explain in what way? And I said, well, I just feel really irritable when after a period of meditation. And he thought for a moment and he said, well, maybe that's how you are. And I was thinking to myself, I might look for another spiritual director. But the beauty of that now in retrospect, yeah, I was angry. What nerve does he have saying that to me? I somehow expected a pat on the back and, oh, my dear, this will pass. Don't worry about it. But what it made me do, and I think sometimes our group does this for us, or a spiritual director, it made me have to look deep inside to see what the root cause of the irritability was. And, of course, not thinking about or knowing the word of dismantling or unloading, but that it was loosening up what Thomas says, that hard pan of the stuff, the recessed, the baggage that exists within us that began to surface. Of course, I didn't know that for years. So anyway, you get what you need. And certainly, he was a very, very wise spiritual director. So exemplifies, I would not say that was an example of utmost charity, but it's what I needed to hear. The purpose of soul friending in centering prayer groups, of course, the fundamental purpose is to share the prayer and to be an example of encouragement and inspiration to one another to persevere in the prayer. The mutual support of one another as the group, the collective mind of the group, submits to the divine therapy of the purification process. Does that make sense? Do you want me to say that again? The mutual support of members as the collective mind of the group begins to submit to divine therapy of the purification process. We think of ourselves in the group as individuals, which certainly we are. And we don't realize for a time that what is happening is that there's a formation of the collective mindset of the group that is aided by the grace of spirit in your midst. Become aware of the obstacles in your path. And I mentioned earlier this morning, the check-in helps us to be aware. A check-in with utmost charity helps us to become aware of the obstacles in our own path, but the things we may need to change in our centering prayer group. It also provides support and reassurance through the dry periods, not particularly the hills, but the valleys, which affects attitudes, actions, and reactions of the group, the collective mind of the group. Have you ever sat in your prayer group and wondered what you were doing there? Have you ever sat in your prayer group and wondered what you are contributing to that collective mind of the prayer group? Nope, not ever. Goes on to talk about the nature of soul friending in groups. That it is helpful if members possess a listening attitude. We talked about that this morning. That the others often mirror aspects of ourself, both positive and negative. Members support but don't attempt to fix. Some of the characteristics we talked about this morning, harboring an attitude of trust, particularly in faith sharing, that non-judgmental attitude that creates a non-threatening environment and non-intimidating. Gratitude for the group experience. It's really a privilege. And here's a tough one. Suspension of personal concerns, preferences, agendas, fears, or desires for self. Now, Nestor has presented a presentation that I think really speaks to this basic presentation called The Five Stages of Maturity to Groups. The five stages that the group goes through to a level of maturity where soul friending can take place. And so this suspension of personal concerns, when we come to a prayer group, especially when a newcomer comes to the prayer group, we may not be able to articulate why we're there, what we're seeking, but subconsciously there may be hidden agendas. There may be expectations. There may be all kinds of things. Maybe we just need a social outlet, like the gentleman with the bag of rocks that I mentioned this morning. There may be fears or desires for self. A person may just want to be heard. Soul friending will arise spontaneously in a group at a certain stage of growth. And at that stage of growth, the group should receive limited help from a facilitator. The group should not be dependent on a facilitator, but remember what we talked about, bringing the people to the threshold of their own interior knowing. So no dependence on the facilitator, but the facilitator looks for the truth to surface from within a group, insight, understanding. The facilitation of the meeting should be shared by members, by other members, when appropriate. Give me some examples of what you think the role of a facilitator should be. How many, let me ask you, how many here are facilitators or have been facilitators in the past? Okay.
In our group, we're all facilitators.
Okay, so that's a shared experience.
But we're not all equal. I mean, we don't all know the rules. It's true. We don't, I mean, they do it differently depending on the person that's in charge that day.
Okay, which rules are you referring to?
The gathering in
okay.
silence,
okay.
not being social in the beginning, okay. walking into the room, and I mean, us old timers, there's a silence. Instead of, oh, how was your week? How, that.
Okay.
So each can be different in
okay.
our group.
All right. And it's generally based on what you have set up for yourselves as what gives you life and the best way to do it for what your needs are. And that's really the way it should be. Yes?
You wanted to know what you thought a facilitator should be. In my estimation, it's a person who will be there every week, and also I have made an agenda for everybody and copied it and given it out, and also we have what the whole group wants to do. It's not just one person. Like you said, everybody's equal, and also facilitate the whole procedure. As that lady said, silence at the beginning, go to the chapel, do our centering, back in silence. We have the whole agenda. And I every week will email everyone, hope to see you on Wednesday, da-da-da, just to remind everybody that we will be there. But everybody takes over when I'm not around. So, and I've always suggested, if someone else wants to be facilitator full-time here, but so far no one has. So.
You know why? Because you are a really good facilitator. And I love the fact that decisions are made from a point of consensus, and that the group agrees any content that is introduced into the group, and it's not like you prepare agenda according to your own, you know, agenda needs. So thank you, Rosemarie. Anyone else on the role of facilitator? Yes.
I think it's just someone that provides, you know, a place for prayer and provides a climate of inspiration for further prayer and for further furthering yourself along the path of the contemplative journey.
Yes. And we all need that. And I know from the very first days of contemplative outreach, you know, Father Thomas really encouraged the formation of prayer groups immediately following an introduction to centering prayer. Because in his wisdom, he knew that, just think about it, when we go to an intro workshop and we go home and no one else in our household is doing centering prayer, and we try and explain what the heck we are setting out to do and what we heard, and then we sit down in the chair all by ourselves and try to replicate what happened in that group, you know, it kind of falls through the crack. And not for everyone, that's for sure. But how important it is, and he really, in his wisdom, knew the importance of people having that support, particularly in the first year, of until the prayer is really integrated. So this was really the reason that he wrote these articles. The primary role of the facilitator is to be faithful to a practice of centering prayer. How can we ask others to be faithful if we are not faithful to centering prayer? And if we are not, how will we be able to answer questions or field these questions to the group and support that process? The facilitator does not need academic certification. Whew, thank God. We don't need credentials. We just need to be doing the prayer. And we just need to have an inclination to serve. It's helpful to have some development of the intuitive faculties. It is in service to awakening the group sensitivity to the activity of the Spirit moving within the group. Is there a point can any facilitator here kind of connect with that time in the group that they sense the activity of the Spirit moving within the group? Yes.
We do lectio, and it's during those periods of sharing the four moments of lectio where you see the Holy Spirit is at work within the group. Okay. It is just absolutely visible that the Holy Spirit is directing the group.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yes.
In our group, I think all of us in our group don't feel the Holy Spirit in the room. We just know He's there with us. And it's very calming and peaceful. And almost, I would say, every one of our members have said that exact thing, same thing that I just said.
Great. Thank you. Dan, you alluded to this, that the role of the facilitator has the potential to offer higher levels of inspiration and motivation. And you mentioned inspire or inspiration. Can a facilitator begin to identify perhaps when the group is going through an unloading process? Yes? Can you remember any situation in your group where in retrospect we can understand that there was an unloading happening within the context of the group, could have been precipitated by one person or by...
Just to address the
the fact that Florida has a seasonal population, and that even though they practice or are part of a group up north and they come down, we're really not that close yet till they've had three or four sessions with us. And that, I think, would be difficult to ascertain if they're going through an unloading or whatever, unless they recognize it in themselves and share that with us. But that's just my input on that.
Okay. Yes?
Long years ago, when I was in my first group, I had an experience of a weeping during my centering prayer, and I was so grateful that the group was there so that they would say, oh, that's all right, you're just getting rid of some old sorrow. And it gave me hope. So whenever anything happens nowadays in my group, I will tell the group that, you know, well, if you start laughing, you might have had a joke you'd never heard of or never got before. And the Holy, God is the eternal therapist, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, that's simple. That's clear. We get that.
I've noticed that in groups, sometimes people in the group seem to be having the same, not necessarily the same situation, but the reactions and how they're expressing is the same. The only problem with that, problem that I have experienced that comes up at that time, is that it becomes difficult not to sort of give advice or to empathize to the point where you're crossing the guidelines.
Okay, interesting. Okay, and conflict within the group, maybe even among just two people, where they don't resonate with one another, can be an indication that something is going on within the group, too. Not just with the individual, but also has the potential to impact the group. So, interesting. Thank you. Okay. Hopefully, the facilitator will develop the insight to see the purification happening in self and others. The facilitator does not preach or teach, but rather leads the group members to, as we've said, the threshold of their own interior inner truth. The facilitator has the capacity to redirect the group from tension to relaxation and constant re-surrendering to the presence of God within the group. And, of course, expresses utmost charity in all situations and fosters genuine care and concern among group members for one another's soul. Remember, that, and this is, when we call it soul friending, do we see one another as soul? Do we intuit one another as a soul? Or do we relate to personality at service level? Because we're not going to like some personalities. We're going to resonate with some personalities and not resonate with other personalities. Okay? So, in later articles, Father Thomas talked about the further development of soul friending, and I want to just move through this because I'd like for us to do some small group work this afternoon. Remember the reality of what is happening in the prayer group. Pray for one another, that this group that you're giving time and energy to will be a channel of God's truth and love for each member, and that the mystery of transmission is happening within the group. All right. I have a handout here, and I just want to address this for a moment.
And I'm sorry that we didn't hand this out. I think I'm just going to hold off for a moment, because one of the things, you know, right now we could look at, okay, we want it to be a channel of God's truth and love. We want to know the mystery of transmission within the group. We want to have the reality of what is happening in the group. But sometimes there are attitudes that can create obstacles within our midst. And I have this handout that's called Seven Deadly Attitudes. And this is used in the human condition workshop that I love, because we learn so much from it. And actually, Sister Bernadette Teasdale put this together and does a presentation around the Seven Deadly Attitudes. She's in Denver, retired now. So you'll have a handout, but I'm just going to talk about these quickly. The Seven Deadly Attitudes: attachments. And all of these, when Nestor gives that presentation on the stages that we go through to what we can call maturity in a group process, sometimes along the way, these might be a stumbling block, or the group might hit a brick wall, or you may lose people from the prayer group and they don't share with you why they never come back. So attachments, aversions. You know what an aversion is. It's something I hold out here and I don't want to deal with it. I don't like it. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to deal with it. Comparisons. That person is more spiritual than me. Oh my gosh, they have more experience than me. They're so holy. I'm not holy. They're worthy to have a relationship with God. I'm not worthy to be loved by God. All of these unconscious expectations. Well, this group isn't what I thought it would be. It's not fulfilling my needs. Of course, I really don't know what my needs are, but it's not fulfilling my needs. Anticipation. Well, I thought it would be different. I thought it would be more interesting, or I didn't know we'd be watching videos, or why don't we have guest speakers, or why don't we do insight meditation? You know, I've done centering prayer, and I've done it for 6 months, but now I'd like to do something else. What about competition? Subtle, very subtle. What about judgment? Underlying judgment. So this can equal in us and in the group a state of dis-ease, and in our personal being will equal suffering if we harbor and act out in the human condition with these seven deadly attitudes manifest in our life experience on a continual basis. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that Bernadette can say it better than I can. So on the other side is just an example of what you've heard over the years, so we can certainly pass that out. So in terms of those deadly attitudes, we want to facilitate the group away from counseling, therapy, over-conversation, over-socializing, and manipulation. Let me say something about over-socializing. There was a time in the St. Louis chapter when I said that I was given the responsibility to support the facilitators. At the time, we had 22 groups. And I thought the best way to do that was to begin to visit the groups and show up and be with them and pray with them. And oh my goodness, did I learn a lot by that. And I remember going to one group, and they did not start, many groups start with centering prayer, but we sat down and we talked, and I was getting to know them and told them what my role was in the chapter. and they welcomed me, and we had soda and we had popcorn. And then we watched a video. Well, the video was so bad, I couldn't even make out the person who was giving the talk. And I asked them, well, who is this? They said, oh, it's some kind of priest. We think he lives in the East and his name is Arika or something like that. And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. So anyway, and so then I thought, well, we'll send her at the end. You know, they sent her at the end. And pretty soon after the video, people got up and started to leave. And I just casually asked, do you, when do you do your centering prayer? Oh, well, we do it if we feel like it. And sometimes we don't feel like it. Actually, most of the time. So that was a wonderful example of over-socialization in a centering prayer group where the prayer never happens. And in terms of very subtle manipulation is like, I'd like to reform the group to what I think would serve me and my needs. And that can result in attitudes, opinions, and a certain behavior projected on the group. I have a need to make things go right. My perspective, of course, of what is right, and my expectations for the agenda. And I could certainly be a better facilitator than the facilitator we have. I've received calls like that. And I've certainly received calls from facilitators about troublesome prayer group members and calls from prayer group members about facilitators. No. So, and of course, being aware of role reversal, transference or counter-transference, and attitudes and behaviors projected onto the group. So it just goes on to talk about the emergence of feelings from facilitators or members that, and they may take form as confusion. One of the things that I know that the St. Louis chapter, I think confusion happens sometimes when people enter a prayer group and they have not had the benefit of an introductory workshop to centering prayer. And the prayer group continues to recycle the same questions and responses that they did 5 years ago when they started as a group. And one of the things that St. Louis did to help that situation, to help the person that was coming in, is that if there's not a workshop, certainly they are welcome to come, but also that they commit to attending the next introductory workshop that is offered. And it really benefits them, answers a lot of the questions that they're projecting onto the group, and then the group can move on and they can feel more integrated and part of the group. There's always a lot of questions about open groups, closed group, and Father Thomas had no problem with saying if you are working, if you've been together for a long time, if you're working on particular things in your group, reading a particular book that may be more advanced or not particularly understood by a newcomer, it is perfectly okay to have a closed group. It can always be opened at such time you finish that particular study or whatever. So, anyway. And you folks are so experienced, I don't really have to talk about creating an atmosphere, even though Father Thomas did talk about it. Just give people a feeling of spaciousness and underlying peace. Focus with quiet clarity and foster an attitude and environment of being in prayer with others. And that theological principle, number 2, the contemplative dimension of the gospel manifests itself in ever-deepening union with the living Christ and the practical caring for others that flows from that relationship. And that is what we are all about. Any questions?
When I initially came to Florida, I entered a parish that was really icky and problems with the priests and all that. But in that parish, there was a young couple who invited me to come to a centering prayer group. And from that moment on, for 25 years, I've done it. And I've done it on my own because I left the parish and I tried other groups and I tried a lot of other stuff. So it's been 25 years now. And when I didn't even know there was a centering prayer where Pam is, and I heard about it when I went to the parish for some sort of a celebration or something. So I came back into just the centering prayer group. But one of the most amazing things was I felt like I was coming home. I could almost cry. You know, I felt like I'm back where I belong again after having explored even non-Catholic, you know, Unity and places like that. But it was the prayer that drew my heart. It was the focus that drew my heart. And from the moment I stepped in, I'm 18 months, I think, with the group, every time I just look forward to going. I hate it when I can't go. I feel uplifted when I leave. And I think this one saying says it. I guess it's about teaching, but they may not remember what you taught them, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. And I always feel I'm right. I'm in my right place now for 18 months. And there's not, the only way I can explain it as it moves throughout the group is there's none of putting anybody down, or there's no looking at, no, none of that kind of stuff. And I don't experience that a whole lot. I do with certain close friends. But as far as an entire group, I haven't experienced that. So I feel like I come home where I belong with my beloved and with all the beloveds that are around me.
That's great.
It's just, I mean, I can't describe. It's 25 years.
Wow.
I've done it on my own. They don't believe me when I say that, but
I believe that. Not everybody. And that's a beautiful story, Ruth. And the characteristics that you mentioned about that group indicates it's really a mature group. And look how long you had centered, and what a gift you are to the group and a gift that they are to you. So you found each other. And maybe that's not the usual way that people come to groups, but that's your experience, and it's well and good. We have to realize, too, and, you know, I've been to a couple of chapters where that they would make a comment, well, that person's not in a prayer group. Like, that's a required mandate that you have to be in a prayer group to be a part of a contemplative outreach chapter, which, well, no one ever said that, for heaven's sake. And I would hope that no coordinator or leadership team would ever impose that on people. One of the things that I've learned along the way, too, as helpful as the prayer group is, but there comes a time where maybe that particular prayer group has served its purpose. In the soul, when we're talking about soul friending, in the soul needs of that person. And so they may move away from the group. I think what the thing I think that hurts the most is when a person comes to a group, they are welcome, they're part of the group, and then all of a sudden, spontaneously, they never show up again. And I took the initiative when I assumed that role. I wanted to know why that happens. And I began making phone calls. We didn't have email back then, you know, when I first came as a volunteer to fulfill a practicum for my studies. And so I would call them and talk with them, and not to coerce them to come to the prayer group, but just for my understanding, why is it that some people, even 6 months down the road, you may never see them again, are that the prayer group that once was strong begins to deflate. And I just wanted to know all the dynamics I could learn about a prayer group. And consequently, the outgrowth of that is a very simple presentation that we present. I probably presented it for this chapter, called The Five Common Obstacles to Centering Prayer. And
I found five primary reasons. There are more, but these were the most important that were stated time and time and time again. And sometimes it had nothing to do with the group or the people, but the dynamic of going on. But the facilitator did not recognize that the person was hurting or it just wasn't gelling. Well, anyway, don't have time for that because I want you to have the benefit of the small group experience. So, but anyway, thank you for that lovely story. Any other questions or meanderings? Jeff?
Is Center in Prayer, I myself 10 years ago went through that dark night in the pit experience, and Center in Prayer was instrumental in my recovery. So therefore, I'm eager to reach out to people who may be in a state of deep depression or anxiety. But is it something that you can advertise? Like my background's marketing, so I'm always wanting to market something that has benefits. But is it really, what's Father Keating's, is it something you can, you see where I'm going with it? Or people?
You know, there are so many wonderful people in contemplative outreach that a person could reach out to if they feel a need to go beyond a prayer group or a facilitator or even a chapter coordinator. I mean, everyone is so willing to help. But also what I find out, and I've seen this in myself too, in like especially the early stages, that sometimes I was incapacitated to pray, but I could not yet articulate why, and did not have the capacity to discuss it with anyone else. Or I might have thought it's here now, it'll pass, and not understanding it, and nobody else would understand it. And some people, you just give up. Also, there are extenuating circumstances in life, like life crises, that sometimes incapacitate a person to pray. And I remember that one of my daughters ended up in critical care in the burn unit of the hospital in St. Louis. And I was coordinator, and I was totally incapacitated to pray. But the beautiful thing is that I had the chapter community to pray. And we were hosting a year-long interspiritual dynamic of meeting with other leaders. They invited us who wanted to explore contemplative prayer of all of the faith traditions in St. Louis. And in that time, the grace of that, besides my own contemplative community, I know my daughter has vague memories of someone in a black habit sitting at her bedside, or three men she thought that came in orange robes, or the Swami from Vedanta who came and said something in probably Hindu. She said, I didn't understand what he was saying, but anyway, what a beautiful, beautiful time it was, and she recovered beautifully. But anyway, so life experience, these things grab us by the throat sometimes. But it's wonderful that we have the generosity of these groups and these people that serve these groups and serve you as a prayer group member. I don't know if that answers your question, Jeff, yes. But it's like the 12-step program and the addiction process. The person has, first of all, they have to become aware that they need help. And they have to, secondly, they have to be aware that they are powerless to change the situation in and of themselves. And they have to reach out. So anyway, it's a process. But you can write to Father Thomas and ask your question. He still responds. Yes, and I mean, if he's in good health and has a period of good health, you may receive a response from him. If not, just know he's not able. And think about in your life, what was the hook for you in centering prayer?
An article
on the newspaper. Okay, all right.
Was in your bulletin.
What else?
I was always asking her to do something on Monday night. Barb, I can't do something on Monday night. I have this thing I go to. So I finally said to her, well, what is that thing you go to?
And she said, well, it's a prayer group. Would you like to join me? I had no clue what it was, but I went. She was my best friend. And that's how I knew about, that's how I began my centering prayer, and that was 10 years ago.
And remember, I came to centering prayer because I had an agenda. I wanted to fulfill an academic prerequisite. And so the... a really lofty reason. And so, but I had had a meditation practice with the use of a mantra for 13 years. So anyway, the coordinator, who was a diocesan priest, and he had opened the doors in St. Louis as the first coordinator to contemplation, and I went there as a practicum. So he says to me, he says, well, okay, the first thing you should do is go to an introductory workshop. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, you know, I've been meditating for 13 years. Why do I need to do that? You know? And of course I needed to do that. And when I did, and he gave the presentation, what I heard, wow, was that centering prayer is simply a resting in God. And I was so burnt out of using my own personal energy to implement a mantra day after day after day, that to think that I don't have to do anything, surely I have to do something. What's the catch here? That I can just sit in a state of receptivity, focused, alert receptivity, and allow God to implement the prayer in me. That was heart-piercing and what?
Life-changing.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, anyway. Okay. All right. Enough of that. In our small group, I'd like for us to take a 10-minute break, and no longer, I want to give you the benefit of 30 minutes in group. And in the 10 minutes while you're, whatever you're doing in the next 10 minutes, I'm going to write the focus questions for this small group process on the flip chart. We will be going to the chapel, the church, for centering prayers, and that will close our day.
Here are the questions that Susan Comas wrote on the board for group discussion. Number one, do we exercise listening as a spiritual practice in our personal life and in our group experience? Number two, how can we encourage better listening skills within ourselves and within our centering prayer groups? Number three, what is the difference between a friend or soul friend? Number four, do we understand soul friending? After the discussion groups, the day ended with a session of centering prayer.